Hello, podcast. It is Claire,
your favorite.
Welcome back to another episode of I'll Drink to That. Today we are drinking with Jerry Mitchell. We chat Boop. We chat Devil Wears Prada. We chat a little bit of Legally Blonde. Lots of fun stuff. I have no other introduction other than here we go.
I'm sipping coffee.
Fantastic. I was just about to ask what you were sipping today. Happy Pride.
Thank you so much.
You are the first interview for Pride Month. So,
well, as it should be.
Very exciting. I am also drinking coffee in my fancy schmancy Sir Davis Cowboy Carter cup.
Fabulous.
Beyonce. Well, I'll start off for the podcast at least. Congratulations on all of your wins last night. I watched Jasmine and Audra's speeches literally right when I woke up this morning, and it's so exciting to see the two of them win.
It was so special because, you know, Audra has been just communicating with Jasmine and supporting her, and I think for her as a Black woman in the musical theater industry to be able to share that night and that stage with Audra, who, you know, has broken every record in the history of theater as a performer. It was just a magical night to be there and witness that. I was so proud of Jasmine.
I worked very briefly with Jasmine on a show. And I think I have seen her Jimmy Awards performance many, many a time. And I just didn't know it was her, but she's absolutely phenomenal. I saw Boop, I think, like right after you guys opened, maybe right before you opened. And that show is just so fun and entertaining. Yeah. And I love it. It's so joyful.
It's bringing so much joy to the world, which the world needs now. I need it. So that's what I wanted to do. Absolutely. I wanted to bring joy to the world.
When she's fantastic in the show, I mean, her recognition for everything that she's done is well-deserved. I mean, she's phenomenal. Standing ovation.
Yeah, she's getting major standing ovations in Something to Shout About. They go crazy for that 11 o'clock number. It's one of the greatest numbers ever written by David Foster and Susan Birkenhead. It's just a sensational number.
It's fantastic. And also just the show itself. I mean, the opening number is fantastic. I was like, all right, if this is where we're starting, we can only go up from here. And then, I mean, even the opening to act two is so cool. And I know we can see some videos on social media with that. But how did that come to be? I mean, was that the vision all along?
No, well, we were in Chicago and we had the opening to the first act, and I knew that I had to deliver Jasmine as Betty Boop, as the star of the Black and White world. That was my goal with a little versatility. And, you know, I worked on the number and I felt very strongly about what we created in the rehearsal room. But until I walked into the theater and saw the final thing on stage with the orchestrations, with the costumes, with the projections in the set. And, you know, I had been working with Finn Ross on what those projections might do. And he was in London and he would send me videos with my little dancers in the corner of the video screen doing my pre-production steps. We kept developing that Black and White world. But then when you saw it in tech and what was possible, it was even better than I had expected, which was a great thing to walk into the theater and start there. We didn't have an opening to the second act. And what I watched in Chicago was the audience was, as you said, so comfortable and so on board in the first act because they knew what I was going to deliver. Old-fashioned, fabulous, big Broadway production numbers, songs and dances in the style of Betty Boop, right? This is her story. So it has to be stylized in her way. It's coming from her being. And so we didn't have a number in the second act. We just didn't have a number. We had pieced together some stuff and everybody was looking for Betty because she revealed herself by the end of the act and the real Betty Boop was in New York City. So I asked Greg, I said, do you think it's possible? Well, first I asked Finn. I said, I see now that we've been working with the video how quickly we can flip. I said, if I got a costume that could match that, maybe we could create everyone searching for Betty in both worlds at the same time. So that was sort of how it started to present itself to me. I went away. David and Susan had wrote a song. I had told them about this idea. And it wasn't quite there, so I wrote some words out on a piece of paper. I sent it back to them, and then they created Where is Betty? And I went into a studio with Zane Mark, my dance arranger, and we created the dance. And then I went back to Greg and I said, okay, I've seen the costumes that are cut like this. What about like this? And I can line everybody up in a straight line, and half are facing upstage and half are facing downstage. And when they flip, the worlds change. You either go from black and white to color or color to black and white. And I said, I think it could be, he said, I think it's a brilliant idea. And I said, how about we make it in sweatpants first to make sure we're not going to waste a lot of money? So he made me four outfits in sweatpants, cut them in half, gray on one side and bright colors on the other. He sewed them together. I brought the dancers to the studio and we put them on the dancers and we did a chorus of the number. And I went, this is going to work. This is going to be amazing. And that was how, and that took from March until we performed on Broadway, almost a year of planning and creating and pre-production and working with the dance arrangers and writing the song and getting the costumes right. You know, it's, and then the
The
lighting.
lighting, I was just gonna say,
Right.
well, it paid off. And as a photographer, the color theory used
Yeah.
with your lighting is just fantastic. It's
When we
so
got, when we
exciting.
actually got all the pieces together and we were on stage teching the number, I realized with Philip, my lighting designer, that we needed to keep the black and white side in white light more. I needed to change their body angles a little bit because you could see a little bit of the color on the black and white side, but the black and white side completely disappeared on the color side. So I had to change the choreography a bit and shape it with the lighting designer as we put on the final touches. And that's how we got the best version of it.
Well, I love a glitzy, glammy Broadway musical. So this is
Who
so
doesn't?
fun. It's so fun. It's a nice little refresh, like, taste of fresh air. I love it. You have also worked a lot. I mean, you've done a ton of fantastic shows. I remember, I think Kinky Boots was the first thing that I saw of yours as a little high schooler. And I was like, this is the most fun I've ever had in a
Oh,
theater.
wow.
Can you tell me, since you've gone, you were a performer and then a choreographer, director, producer, is there an element of this world that you like the most, or is it just you are all of it?
Well, I love it all, but I as myself, I prefer the creating part of it. I love being in the room with the actors rehearsing and working on the material. That's where the most fun is for me. And out of the whole creative process, I actually enjoy the technical weeks of a musical more than anything. It's long hours, it's hard work, but it's where all the departments come together. And musicals are about that. They're about collaboration. So the musical isn't really fully ignited until all the departments are represented. And that happens in the tech weeks, right? So those are right, the most exciting times for me because you often know what you want when you go in, and you've often worked really hard to create that first pass of your musical,
Right, yeah.
but you have to be open to the possibility of something presenting itself that you hadn't planned on or didn't think of until you have those elements, and then having the guts to say, oh, this is even better than I had anticipated. Let's go in this direction, right? So the process of creating never ever dies unless you decide it's dead. You can be, when I go back to my musicals after I've already opened them on Broadway and I get the chance to do them in London or in Australia or in Japan or Korea, I'm constantly recreating them. You know, that's the thing about musicals. And I'm recreating them for, oh, I never got to that. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do that. But also, I have different actors playing the roles. So I have to make it work for them. I have to make it look good on them. And that means changing a step, changing a costume, changing a hairstyle, changing a lighting cue. They have an idea. Oh, I wanted to sit when I started the song. Well, let's try. Right, you know, so that's all part of the creative process and part of the joy of collaboration. When you keep yourself open to the possibility, that's when it's the most fun.
I want to talk a little bit about The Devil Wears Prada because that
Oh,
is
yeah.
one of my favorite movies. Grew up on that movie. Can probably say most of the monologue. I know I'm not as good as other people. I know I had a dance teacher in college who one time, I don't know what we were doing. Genuinely don't know what we were doing. I think we were just standing at the bar waiting to start class and he just whipped it out. He just was
Did
like,
the
"You know
whole
what
monologue.
I'm gonna do?" The entire monologue right here, right now at 9 a.m. in the morning. And we were like, fab, we'll take it. Can you tell me what it's been like to take a movie? I know you've done this with a few shows, but a movie as big as The Devil Wears Prada, where there's a lot on the line because a lot of people really, really love that movie and turning it into a hit musical on the West End.
Yeah. So the show's doing great business in the West End. People are very, very, very happy. And that's really what my goal was. My goal was to honor the movie and then add the element of Elton John's score, right? So when you're taking a film and you're bringing it to the stage, Legally Blonde, Kinky Boots, Hairspray, Devil Wears Prada, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, The Full Monty, others. You know, I've been doing this for a while and I get asked that and I'm up for the challenge, right? But each of them has their own sort of responsibility to the source material. And what I found was, you know, the audiences wanted that film on stage. And so Elton did this beautiful job of creating original songs for the character Andy, most importantly, and for the character Miranda. And we had to figure out together how those characters sing and why they sing, right? And Elton wrote two incredible songs for the character Andy that finish both of the acts that I think are really stunning. And the first one is at the end of Act One. And she sings a song about, Am I a Miranda girl? And everybody's been saying, you know, are you a Miranda girl? Or you know, Christian's going, Hey, Miranda girl. And now she's asking herself, Have I become a Miranda girl? And why shouldn't I become a Miranda girl? Right? So she's asking the question and answering it for herself. She's gonna take the internship. She's gonna go, I mean, not the internship. She's gonna take the job and as the first assistant and go with her Miranda to Paris. And you know, she has no ill feelings towards Emily, but she's being offered something that could eventually, the carrot for her is help her become a great writer. Right? So that's why she takes it. And, you know, for a young girl today in our world to be able to stand up for herself and take something is very, very important. It's an important message. I kept the musical in 2005 when the book and the movie were being made because Miranda is, let's face it, you know, you would be at HR every day if you had
Absolutely.
Miranda,
If it
right?
was
So
2025, right?
2025, it's like, oh, not so much, right? So I wanted Miranda to have bite, right? And I wanted her to be that boss. I've certainly had those bosses, that you know, you admire and you look up to, but they also can be very abusive, right? And that's part of it's a Faustian tale, right? That's the story. The story is a Faustian tale. You know, she's being offered everything. She just has to sell her soul to get it. And will she do it or won't she? And that's sort of, and then she has a song at the end of the second act, and she sings about what's right for me. What kind of person do I want the world to see? And that's how she becomes a writer. Right. And so that she decides, I will do this if I never make a cent, if I'm never famous, if I never wear a beautiful dress, I'm going to be a writer. That's what I want to be. Right. And so that's a really great arc for the girl to take in the musical and have those songs. Then I wanted a song in this musical that presented Miranda as the all-powerful, woman of Runway Magazine. So I gave her the best entrance I've ever given any lead character in a musical. And when Billy Porter came and saw the show in London, I said, "Don't be mad that I gave her a better entrance than I gave Lola." Because his entrance as Lola is pretty fabulous too, but
Yes.
this one tops that. And then Elton wrote this fabulous song for her, large and in charge, running the place. It's called The House of Miranda, which is, that's what a fashion show is. It's like, who owns the house? Whose house am I in? And then I said to Tom Deering and Giles Martin, the music team that work with Elton, I said, it should have the feeling of Padam Padam. It should be
Yeah.
like, it should be like a feeling we can get into. Miranda's very hip. She's very connected to what's happening right now. And I said, it should have that sort of sense to it so I can dance to it. So this Runway Magazine, everybody is in sync when Miranda's in charge. Everybody's moving at her command. And so we had a lot of fun creating that song, and Vanessa delivers it beautifully.
I'm sure. I'm hoping one day I'll either fly over there to see it, or it'll come back over on this
I
side of
think
the
it's going
world.
to be coming. I think it's going to be coming this way. I hope soon. Yeah.
Fingers crossed. I remember when I was in college, I was called in for Emily, and I remember being like, "Oh my God, this is going to be a musical. This is the best day of my freaking life. I am so excited." I think I called my mom and I was like, "Mom, there's going to be a musical." It was so exciting, get a really fun role to attempt because I am nothing like Emily in real life. So I was like, "Ooh, I get to play no Mean Girl." Okay, so when you're in you, I mean, talk about Boop and Legally Blonde and Hairspray and all of these shows. You have found, specifically, I'm thinking about Devil Wears Prada because she is fantastic as Miranda. When you're in the process for casting, what do you look for in a person? Especially if you're doing a show like these movies where are you looking for something, or is it just specific on the show of are you looking for someone who can play what we have seen for years and years and years in this singular take of a movie, singular take,
Well,
or,
for all of these, I needed singers first, right?
Right.
Because they're musicals, and of course, musicals, I think, are always about the score. The score has to be brilliant, and the people delivering it have to be able to really sing it. And with Vanessa, I had in the back of my I had worked with Vanessa once. She did Broadway Bears for me, but I was a
Oh, okay.
big fan of Vanessa. And I'd seen her in Into the Woods, and I had seen her in other things that she had done. And she was always in the back of my head. And when this happened, I thought, oh, wow, Vanessa has that class and that style, and she can sing, and she can sing pop. And I thought, he might be the perfect match for Elton John for a musical like this. She also has a big 11 o'clock number that takes place in the film, the James Holt luncheon. They have the luncheon in the film where
Yes.
Miranda gives everything to James Holt and Jacqueline Follet. In the musical, I made it a fashion show. We're at the
Oh.
James Holt fashion show. And so she sings this number while the girls are doing a catwalk around her, and it goes in slow motion and it goes in high speed. And it's a very elegant throwback to silk chiffon dresses from the period, like you'd see Grace Kelly in a
Right.
Hitchcock film. James Holt has done this classic Hollywood silk chiffon idea. And she's singing about no one's gonna kick Miranda off the top of the mountain, right? Stay on top is the song. And again, Vanessa delivers it like, wow, right? But I knew I needed somebody to do that, and she does it. And So that was easy. With Boop, it was interesting because I had worked with Jasmine prior to Boop. We did
Right.
Becoming Nancy at the Alliance.
Yeah.
And so I got her right out of school, Manhattan School of Music. I think she was in for a couple of years and then she left and I got her and put her in this musical. And immediately I recognized her star power and her ability. And she was very young and very just getting her feet wet. And so when Boop came along after that, I asked her to come in and she did the role of Trisha in the reading.
Oh,
Trisha was
interesting.
19 and Trisha was Carol's daughter. Carol's the one who's running the mayoral campaign for Raymond and then takes over. And so after the first reading, I said to Bob Martin, I said, I think we should make Trisha 14. And I think she should be living with her aunt in Harlem, and we don't know what's happened to the parents, and she's obsessed with Betty Boop. So then when she meets Betty Boop, we can make that about, a girl who's living with her aunt, who's busy with work and doesn't have full time for her, is obsessed with this cartoon thing because she wants to be an artist, and then she meets her hero, and then her hero says, "Be you, don't be me." I just thought that was a better way into that relationship. And so Jasmine was out because she was too old for the part of Trisha if she was a 14-year-old. So then we were looking for Betty, and I said, "How about Jasmine come in and sing for Betty?" Because Jasmine's voice, David loved her voice, and we brought her in for Betty. And at her first audition, she did great, except she failed in the tap dancing because
Oh,
she hadn't
no.
tapped in a long time. So she went back to Dreamgirls. She was on the road with Dreamgirls. And I saw a lot of other girls. I couldn't get Jasmine out of my head. More importantly, Bob Martin, our book writer, couldn't get Jasmine out of his head. And so we brought her back in and we worked with her. And then I took myself out of the audition process because I felt like I was intimidating her because we had a relationship already
Because
as
you'd already
director
worked
choreographer.
together.
And she was trying to please me, and I didn't want her to please me. I wanted her to find it on her own. So I left her with my associate director, DB Bonds, for a lot of the audition process. And then I came at the end and I said, "This is your part. I know it. DB knows it. You know it. Now go in there and tell these producers, I'm Betty Boop. Hire me today and let's get to work." And she did. She owned it and she went in and she laid claim to it. And that's what you have to do as somebody who's auditioning. You have to go in and say, "I'm the character. Hire me. I'm here." And she did. And I couldn't have been more proud of her. And so, yeah.
It's very, I mean, I barely know her, but it's always so exciting to see people win in this industry, and she is definitely winning this season, which is super exciting. And I love DB. I've worked with him once. I was able to like someone wasn't able to go to a class of his, and so I stepped in and I got to go, and that was really fun to sit in and watch and work with
Well,
him.
DB, is my associate choreographer and has been for 10 years, 15 years, I don't know how long. And he's a director in his own right. But he was the star of the first national tour of Legally Blonde. He played Emmett for me.
Oh, okay.
And then he also starred in the first national tour of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. He played the Norbert Leo Butz role for me.
Yeah.
So he was an actor in two of my tours where he was the star, and I got to direct him and watch him star in a musical. His ability to communicate what I want to an actor is better than my ability to communicate it. That's why I love him so much, because as an actor, he knows how to talk to the actors and get the results I'm trying to get from them, because he knows, because he was an actor, and that always helps.
I do have to admit, I was so late to the game with Legally Blonde. I don't think I listened to the soundtrack or saw it until I was in college, and my roommate looked at me like I was absolutely insane for only knowing like three songs and what Bend and Snap was. And I was like, well, I've seen the movie, trust. But we were moving out. So all we had were some air mattresses and a very small TV sitting on top of a cooler. Everything else had been moved out. And she was like, sit down. We are watching Legally Blonde and you're gonna like it. And I said, okay. And we sat down and I watched it. I was like, fine, I like it. I like it. I do. Okay, so tell me a little bit about Broadway Bears, because we're getting to Bears time.
Broadway Bears, yes, three weeks, 3 weeks away.
Yeah. I've
How
never
long?
been to a Broadway Bears. I would love to go to a Broadway Bears. Actually, I would love to photograph a Broadway Bears, but tell me
You
a little bit
have to go
about.
to Broadway. Kellen Stensel is this year's director. The theme is come out wherever you are. A Disney Wicked Wiz kind of theme. It's an event that I started back in the 90s when I was dancing in my last show, The Will Rogers Follies. I was on a drum. Willa Kim had made my costume and I was very naked. And we were raising money for the Easter Bonnet competition for Broadway Cares. And my dressing roommate said, "You should go dance on the bar at Splash and get some tips and raise money for us." And a light bulb went off over my head because I had not directed a Broadway show yet and I wanted to. And so I put together eight guys from other shows and created a show, choreographed an opening for all of us. Then we each did an individual strip. We went down to the club, we did this thing. There was a line around the block, and the owners of the club, Brian and Harriet Splash Bar, said, "If you do a second show, we'll kick everybody out and make them come back in and pay again." And so they did, but they all came back in. The club was packed. We did two shows. We made about $8,000. I said, "I'll do this better. I'll add girls." I added girls 6 months later, did the second Broadway Bears at Shout. We made $17,000. I said, "I'll do this better. I'll add a theme." We did the third and fourth at Bump. We were up to $35,000 and $50,000. We did 2 years there, 2 years at Palladium, 2 years at Webster Hall. Then we got to the Roseland Ballroom in Midtown, and we did several years there. And the show just kept growing and growing and growing. Everybody in the industry has participated in making it this crazy, massive annual event. And last year, we did two shows at the Hammerstein Ballroom and made $2.25 million in one night. And all of that money goes to Broadway Cares. We've raised over $29 million for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And they gave me the Isabel Stevenson Tony Award a couple of years ago for philanthropy for Broadway Bears. And I have to tell you, it's such an honor to have that Tony Award because that's not one you can get from doing your work. That comes from doing a whole other kind of work. And I wanted to make it safe for the community to be together and to do something about the disease and hopefully help lives. And that's really so rewarding to me that it's still in existence and still doing that.
It seems, I mean, I watch videos and clips and I've seen photos and it just looks like so
Well,
much fun.
it's like going to a Beyoncé concert or going to a Katy Perry concert or going to a Madonna concert, and those people aren't on stage. It's the dancers who are the stars, which is what
Right.
I wanted to do. And we get to dance at Broadway Bears in ways that we're not always asked or challenged to dance in Broadway shows. And we also get to interact with dancers in other shows in this particular benefit, which also doesn't happen in some of the others. You're always doing something as your show, as your show. This is you as an individual coming and bringing yourself to the event and then walking out of the event with a whole new group of friends,
Right.
right?
It's looks so exciting, and tickets are still available.
Oh, yeah. Broadway
Yeah.
Cares, I'd say it's on the website, and all of the kids have their pages up for donations. We
Yes,
do this
yeah.
thing called the Strip-a-thon, where you can tip them now ahead of time. And yeah, it's incredible.
I always have such high praise for folks who are in the industry and are also wanting to do things like this and creating art, one for the sake of art, but also for something like Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS and the philanthropy part of it. So thank you for all of that, and it's
Listen,
wonderful.
I've been in New York City for 45 years now, right? And I came from a little town in Pawpaw, Michigan, where I very much had a community. And when I got here and AIDS was starting to take away my friends and my theater family, I had to do something. I had to do something. I couldn't sit back. And what I realized, what I was doing, was I was trying to put my arms around the community and protect myself and all of us so we could be here and we could continue to create the art that we're creating. Well, that is what it's all about. It's about this community. And we have a community in theater and on Broadway that is unlike any other community in the world. It's not like the West End. It isn't like Korea. It isn't like Japan. It isn't like Australia. I've been to all of those places. I've had my shows be successful in all of those places. And everyone says the same thing to me who's now been here. There is nothing like the Broadway community. It's just different. And I think part of it is just that we are packed into a 10 block radius. And so we don't get in cars. We don't get on boats or planes to get to work. We are on the street walking past each other every day. And we are tighter knit than most theatrical communities. That's part of it.
I always love walking around Midtown. I mean, I'm there all the time and I work in the city. I live in Jersey 'cause it's cheaper here. But
Yes, very much.
but it's I mean, it's always so crazy how many people I bump into that I either know or I don't know. I think I've actually walked past you like twice in the last 3 weeks.
The
And
one
I've been like,
time you'll stop me.
I was like, ah, there he is. You seem to be r rushing somewhere. So I was like, oh, I'm gonna just let you know. But it's and you know the it's always also interesting going to the bars afterwards. And I'm like, oh, there's Joy Woods. There's you know Alex Newell. Hey, nice to see you.
I live on 50th Street, so I'm in the middle of Hell's Kitchen in the Times Square area and Broadway. So I see everybody. I see all my friends on the street. I walk 3 times a day down to Boop or down to Times Square, and I pass must pass 50 people I know and say hello
Well,
to.
and I always tell people, I'm like, I walk past people that I haven't seen in years, somehow in New York City, of all places.
Isn't that the craziest
It's
thing?
the wildest thing
The first
ever.
Week I was here at 20, I didn't think I knew anyone in the city. And within 2 weeks, I'd ran into 10 friends that I had met at Summer Theater in St. Louis, Missouri, at the Muni, or at the Hope Summer Repertory Theater in Holland, Michigan. It was crazy. And I thought, oh my God, it's not such a big, bad city.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, my best story is there was a time I was in Schmackery's because my friend was closing and I was like, please make me a hot chocolate. I'm on the way. And he did. And I was there. I was walking. We were chatting for a bit. And I turned to leave. And in walks the student teacher that I had my senior year of high school. It's been 8 years since I've seen her. And she was coming in with her own group of students because now she is a theater teacher. And we looked at each other and we both were like, you look really familiar. Why do I know you? And then we were like, shut the fuck up. Like, it was a wild experience because we haven't spoken to each other. We haven't seen each other. We don't follow each other on social media. And then all of a sudden, of all the places, Schmackery's was where it was. And I didn't even know, I'd forgotten that students were here for their spring break at the time.
That's the magic of New York, I swear.
Yeah, and I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I joke that I have met more people from Charlotte than I have when I was in Charlotte here. It's wild. Every now and then we're passing phone numbers and someone says 704 and I'm like, 704, where'd you go to high school? It's a wild place to be here. 'Cause it feels so big and then all of a sudden you're like, nope, it's really not at
It's
all,
not.
especially in the
It's
theater
not.
industry. So we've talked a little bit about your career. I want to know, what are you binge watching? What movies are you excited for this year? What are you
Hacks,
reading?
hacks, hacks. I can't get enough of hacks. I'm so excited to go see Jean Smart in this play. She's just brilliant. They're all brilliant. What else have I been binge watching? God, I've been watching a lot of stuff, but I can't think of anything. But I get home, I turn something on. We're into all of the series of The Walking Dead, all of them. Every my husband and I, we've watched them all, so we're excited about the new one. But that's pretty much it. If I get a chance to watch something, I'm working on a couple new projects that I'm going to do some readings of it in the fall. I've got to go back to London right after the Tony Awards to start casting for the second year of Prada on the West End. And I'm also opening. I was a mentor to Martin Stowe and Richard, who are doing King of Pangaea at the King's Head Theatre in London, and it opens on the 11th. So
Okay.
I'm going right over after the Tonys to be there for the opening. I'm sort of a producer helping them get their footing in London. It was a beautiful, beautiful story, beautiful music. You can stream some of the songs on wherever you stream music. And King of Pangaea, I'm really a fan of it. It's a beautiful story.
Are there any shows on the season this year that you are also just absolutely in love with?
I've seen everything. I've seen everything. I have to tell you, this isn't such a spectacular time and also a very odd time. Awards, I look, I got an award last night, but I said, I'm going back to the community thing. Celia Keenan-Bolger was up there accepting the Lifetime Achievement Award for Gavin Creel. And it was so moving what she said about Gavin, who I know and have known and worked with, and also Celia, who I've known and worked with, and her husband John, who I've known and worked with. And Celia was a reader at Bernie Telsey the first time I hired her. And Gavin was my original in La Cage aux Folles, which gave me my first drama desk and also my first Tony Award. And he danced for me. And I used to say he danced like a golden retriever. He was such a puppy dog. And I was just in love. Everyone was in love with Gavin, his voice, but also his person. And I said when I got up and accepted the award last night, and I really meant it, is that the award is very special, and I'm very honored that the drama desks have given it to me. But I want to share it with all the other nominees in my category because I've seen your work and you inspire me. And I go to the theater to see everyone else's work. And I always walk out inspired in some way by the other person's work. I see people do things that I could never do. Right? That's what it's about. But also things that inspire me to go do what I do it again or differently or better or deeper. And so I could say something great about every single show this and off Broadway. I saw Goddess off Broadway the other week, and
Oh,
I'm
so
going to
good.
see Nat King Cole, and I go to all the off-Broadway shows if I can get to them to see the musicals, especially. I am a bit of a musical pig. I love musicals. I've always grown up in musicals. Musicals are my thing, but I also see a lot of plays. And now I've seen all the musicals. Now I'm starting on the plays. And Oh Mary, I saw when it was downtown before it moved
Fantastic.
to Broadway, and it was just fantastic. And Cole is incredible. So they're all incredible. But so I'm inspired when I see theater. So I go to theater as often as I can.
I as an actor, I go to theater to study and just to also be inspired because what people do 8 times a week is crazy to me, and I have the small dream of wanting to do that, so.
As a creative person, I think by seeing all of the other work and seeing how the audiences are receiving the work helps me understand where we are as a world. Every audience is a small example of the world. And how they receive the story, how they receive the news, that is very telling to me as a director choreographer.
I've been in some, it's so cool going to shows and even shows that I've seen multiple times and getting to watch someone who has never seen it before in the audience and hearing the reactions
I mean,
is
I love to see a show. I love to see a show when it's being worked on out of town. I love to see it when it opens on Broadway. And then I love to see it 3 months after it's been on Broadway because the actors and their growth, watching their growth, and then watching how they fill out every detail, right? Sometimes they color outside the lines, sometimes they
Right.
stay inside the lines. That's really wonderful to watch actors, how they grow, sometimes too big, not big enough. It's really important information for me as a director when I'm considering someone to be in something with me,
Right.
right? Spend that time together, because when you actually get in the trenches with other actors to create, you're starting a relationship that's going to last a very, very long time. And I love to have fun. I mean, I really love to have fun. So I want people who want to come and be there in that room every day and do the work and have a good time doing it and go out and have a drink afterwards, right? That's really what I love.
It's like a fun playground that you get
Yeah.
paid to be at.
Yeah, we're so fortunate.
Okay, so because the podcast is called I'll Drink to That,
Yes.
I must know, what is your go-to cocktail coffee
Margarita,
order? Oh, a
margarita, margarita.
margarita? Are you a spicy
Well,
margarita or like a classic?
if it's a cocktail, a margarita. Yes, I actually love a jalapeno cucumber margarita. Like, I'll do that in a minute, in an instant. My other two major have to have every day is coffee. Well, I don't have to have a margarita every day. I have coffee every morning, 3 cups. I've never finished the full cup. I pour it, and if it isn't super hot, I won't finish it. I pour it out and do another
Do
cup.
another one.
I usually have about 3 halves of a cup. And then I have to drink water. I drink about 2 big liter and a half bottles a day,
Nice.
constantly. And I'm constantly running to the bathroom to pee. It's why none of my shows will have a first act longer than 1 hour and 10 minutes.
You gotta get out. You gotta get in that line.
If I'm going to a one act and they say it's 1 hour 40, I have to stop drinking water at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock show.
So you're
I'm
ready.
not kidding. I said, okay, if it's a one act, I just need to know. So I stop my water intake at about 3 o'clock.
I have made the mistake of not looking to see the runtime of a show, and I've been like, oh,
I really have to go to the bathroom.
I goofed. I went to a bar before this. I got a drink when I walked in, and now we are only 1.5 hours in, and there's still like 30 more minutes, maybe 20 more minutes, but they've decided to make it one
One act.
one act. All right, we'll try. We'll see what
This
happens.
is why Six is my favorite musical.
Oh, six is in and out, 9 songs. They're so
Six.
fast.
I saw Six 4 times in London, and then I hired Amy Adkins to be Vivian for me in Pretty Woman.
It's so good. Six is a show that I would love to be in. It's just so fun, and you get out early, and you can go home at a normal time. Like, what a world. And living in Jersey, sometimes I get out of shows and I'm like, God, I'm gonna get home at like almost midnight by the time we've gotten out of this show. Enjoyed the show, but now I gotta go. People gotta walk faster. My last question that I ask everyone is, again, because it is a Sondheim theme, we don't really, it's not really Sondheim theme, it's just named after a Sondheim song. Do you have a favorite quote of Sondheim, a favorite musical, favorite
Well,
character?
I have lots of Sondheim quotes. I think for me, Follies would be my favorite musical. I've done it twice, and I hope to do it again. And I think it's not a quote; it's a recollection. I was doing Follies in London. I was the associate choreographer for Bob Avien, and it was my first time in London. I was 26. Cameron Mackintosh was the producer, and Steve Sondheim was there, and we were working on the song composed that he had written for that production. That was a new song he had written for that production. Dan Massey was dancing in it, and I was on stage. I was left with the task on stage. The number had finished, and Bob and Cameron went out to the lobby to do something, and Bob said to me, you just get the dancers off stage whichever way you want to get them off, so we can go on to the next part of the story. You work the exit and the playoff. And I said, okay, great. And Steve had written this playoff music. And he was sitting in like the third or fourth row of the orchestra at the Shaftesbury Theater. I can see the scene, and I'm on stage and I'm choreographing this exit for all the dancers. And Martin plays the music in the orchestra, and I figured it out. And it took about 4/8 to get everybody off stage, except for Dan, who was standing in the center, Dan Massey. And there was still a lot of music. And I was like, what are we going to do? And Steve yells at me. He goes, Jerry, if you don't need the music, just cut it. Just cut whatever you want. Just use what you need. Don't worry about it. You don't have to use all that music. And I was 26, and Stephen Sondheim was giving me permission to cut his music. And it stays in my head because it goes back to the art of collaboration. In collaboration, age doesn't give you privilege. Color doesn't give you privilege. Sexual preference or sexual orientation doesn't give you privilege. Collaboration is collaboration, and every voice in the room matters. And every voice in the room deserves to be heard. And only then will you actually arrive at the best possible collaboration. Now, the director should have the final say, right? I wasn't the director. Mike Ockren and Bob Avian, the choreographer, they were out in the lobby, but they had given me for that moment the job, the task to do something, and I did it to the best of my ability. And Stephen Sondheim, who had done 8,000 musicals, looked at me and said, "Kid, you know what? If you don't like my music, cut it in half and use only half of it. Whatever you want." And I just it reminds me of that. There were lots of experiences like that with Steve. And it just reminds me of that art of collaboration. It reminds me that that is when it can be the best that it can be. So that's a good one to leave on.
That's a great one to leave on. Well, thank you so much for coming and
Thank
sitting
you.
and sipping and spilling the tea with me. It was a lovely conversation to have with you. And is there anything you want to share or advertise, anything that you're doing coming up that you want people to know about?
I am very excited about Becoming Nancy, which is the show that Jasmine first did for me at the Alliance. We did it in the UK. We got really great reviews, and now we're waiting for a theater on the West End. I'm hoping that that happens quickly. And that viral voiceover that's going on, we could see Boop.
Oh,
Everybody's
yes.
got to, we could see Boop. You could see Boop. Go see Boop.
Fantastic.
My
Well,
favorite.
thank you so much for chatting with me. This was so much fun. I hope
Thanks so
to
much.
one day work with you in the creative world out there,
Yeah,
in
we got to make
something.
that happen.
You know what? I can come photograph for you. I'm not the best dancer, but you know
We got to
what?
get you to Broadway Bears. You got to see Broadway
I
Bears.
gotta see Broadway Bears. I really want to. I think I'm out of town this time around. I think I was unavailable last time too, because I think someone was like, I have an extra ticket. Do you want to go? And I was already booked for something else. But one day I'll be there
One
for
day.
sure. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast. And I hope you go see Boop. We could go see Boop. It's such a fun show. I think everyone should see it and get a little pudgy. He's so cute. Thank you, Jerry Mitchell, for coming on. I had a fun time. I hope you enjoyed listening. And we've got some more fun interviews coming up, so get ready for those. Some more midnight reviews coming at you. And yeah, that's it. Find us on the Broadway Vlogs. On Instagram at the Broadway Vlogs. Find me at claire.mcconnell. You can find Jerry Mitchell at Jerry Mitchell. And oh no, that's not his Instagram. Wait, I lied. It's Jammy Prod. JammyProd. All right, see you next time. Bye.